This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Today on AFCEA Answers, highlights from a first season of Conversations. I'm Max Kakis with AFCEA International. Welcome to AFCEA Answers. With the beginning of the new year, it's customary to pause, take stock, and prepare for opportunities in the year ahead. Here at AFCEA Answers, we wanted to also look back on our first season of radio programs designed to stimulate conversation about issues important to the defense, homeland security, and intelligence communities, and the companies that serve them. On our inaugural program in June, we invited Lieutenant General Ronnie Hawkins, the director of the Defense Information Systems Agency, to share with us his thoughts about how mobility fits in with his agency's mission to serve the needs of the warfighter.
When we start looking at what we're doing within the space of security and working with our partners, our industry partners, the thing that we've done now is we've moved the focus on security up front rather than waiting until we've baked in our architecture. And when we put in the security requirements, guides and given them to industry, they are able to work in the security perspectives that we have for Department of Defense and do that on the front end. So do we have everything we need? I think the answer to that is no. Are we going at it the right way? I know the answer to that is yes.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the priorities, are you able to say if security has been handled, if the ability to provide enough bandwidth to the warfighter in the field, are those being met? Are those being taken care of in a manner that you and your colleagues in leadership are satisfied with right now?
Well, when it comes to bandwidth, you never have enough of it. But when you look at the technologies that are out there and how we are able to move the information, how we're able to compress the data, we believe we have the right technologists working that with our industry partners. And more importantly, we're able to focus in on what it is that the warfighter needs, and that is the information anytime, anywhere, and any place.
Even as we consider the notion of every soldier, sailor, airman, Marine, and Coast Guard member with a multimedia information node up their sleeve, there's also the existing base of tactical radios in use in the military. We talked about the next generation of tactical radios with General Kevin Nally, Chief Information Officer with the U.S. Marine Corps, and Dennis Moran, Vice President of Government Business Development with Harris Corporation. In this excerpt, General Nally notes the special procurement challenges he faces.
Part of the challenge that I deal with as a CO is I do not have acquisition authority. And I, with the current acquisition process, I am frustrated by waiting too long to get current emerging IT into the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And at the speed of cyber, I need it now. I don't need it tomorrow. And I think with the handheld devices that we will use in the future that we are currently testing right now with DISA are good. They continually improve. DISA has been very helpful with us. But it has to be secure in a cyber environment. And the individual, use the individual Marines, they understand these current new technology with the handheld devices. And it's not the training and education piece, which is cost money, has gone drastically down because the Marines coming in now, they understand current technology and they know how to use these devices.
Right. What you've defined to me sounds like an acquisition challenge and a contracting challenge. And Denny, you talked about that a little while ago. If you were to offer advice to Mr. Halverson and Terry Takei about reforming the acquisition process so that you could get IT faster, what would be the key to that reform?
From a Marine approach, the key would be do it. Well, I mean, and it's competitive. I'm sorry, sir, but you have to. I understand you have to maintain a competitive atmosphere for the commercial industry. And I'll tell you, with the trusted handheld device that we're working on with Marcor, Syscom, and NSA and DISA, everyone's been completely supportive, to include the major telecommunications companies. They have already helped us build this trusted handheld device. They want to be part of the business, right. All of them. Right. They want to be part of this business.
Right. And I think that, and I understand Kevin's point about the about getting it now. And trust me, I mean, the competitive and the environment exists. There's significant funding, even in these downward trending times, mm-hmm. to move, you know, this kind of capability down in the soldier. And the competitive juices are moving, you know, inside of industry. And I think if you just look to Mr. Kendall's Better Buying Power 2.0, the answer lies there. Hmm. The Army's methodology of buying more often but less items is another way to attack it. I think what the key thing is to get away from the more traditional programs of record. Get out of the way by putting in, you know, different kinds of contract strategies, whether they be IDIQs. Certainly, you've got to have the evaluation piece, both right. operational and developmental. Mm-hmm. But then, as Kevin says, get the heck out of the way and let the warfighter evaluate the different products that are on the market that industry is investing in on their own money, and the best will boil to, or will bubble to the top.
That's retired Army General Dennis Moran, the Vice President of Government Business Development with Harris here in Washington, D.C. Another important topic we addressed on the show is cloud computing. Dave McClure with the GSA says the growth in cloud intersects with how much more we learn about its capabilities.
We still have working our way through security issues in the cloud, dealing with access, location, boundaries, recovery, things like that. But we've made great progress in understanding those. Our understanding of storage and computation in the cloud is advanced beyond virtualization to how do we really store this more efficiently? Because a lot of data to the government is not on demand. It's archived and brought mm-hmm. up as needed.
In another episode on cloud computing, Dave Halverson, the Chief Information Officer with the U.S. Navy, believes that the shape of a cloud computing solution will depend largely on the data.
It'll be a combination of maybe contractor-operated, government-oversighted clouds, and in some cases it'll be a purely contractor-operated. It really depends on what your data is, how much security you want to wrap around it, who is the predominant user of the data, and frankly, are the applications that you're putting in the cloud written or adaptable to that type of distributed technology?
And a reminder that if you'd like to listen to any of the programs mentioned in the show in their entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com/FCA answers. Still to come, talking big with big data. You're listening to the best of FCA answers on Federal News Radio.
AFCEA has been the Association for Global Security since 1946. Experience AFCEA in action at its upcoming events. West 2014, focusing on the sea services, February 11th to 13th in San Diego. The Winter Intelligence Symposium, February 13th in Laurel, Maryland. Air Force ISR Industry Day, February 26th in Chantilly, Virginia. And the Homeland Security Conference, March 10th to 12th in Washington, D.C., many of AFCEA's events offer continuing education to help you maintain professional certifications. Stay in the know with AFCEA's international journal, Signal Magazine. January's issue focuses on C4ISR, defense economics, and acquisition solutions. Further your education by taking advantage of Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute's Step Forward training package that includes 36 cybersecurity courses. Learn more and join today at AFCEA.org. That's AFCEA.org.
Welcome back to AFCEA Answers on Federal News Radio. I'm Max Kakis with our look at the best conversations from our first season on the air. One of our most popular topics by far in our first season was big data. The notion of federal agencies trying to cope with petabytes of digital information, especially multimedia, was addressed in an AFCEA Answers episode featuring Simone Zickman, Chief Information Officer with the Department of Commerce, and Tony West, Vice President for Advanced Research and Technologies with Cisco Systems. Simone Zickman says getting data is not the challenge.
Our ability to generate data is outpacing our ability to manage, store it, move it, and process it. And that's really, I think, one of the things that's a little new and unique to this era of big data that we're seeing today. Because if you look back, there have always been applications that are pushing the edge of cutting-edge technology. So the kinds of challenges that we do have are just how to acquire and ingest the information that we have from sensor platforms, storage of that information, and it's sort of a short-term storage for processing purposes, and then the long-term storage for archival purposes, how you process the data, and just the transport and dissemination of that data. On the weather side, there's a need to move large volumes of data cross-country and even to other countries, and just the movement of that. And certainly management and curation of data over long term is another big priority, especially because for things like climate modeling and weather prediction, the U.S. government maintains long-term records of weather and climate information. So the curation and how we manage that over years and decades is a big priority. And security, obviously, is another important thing. We want to manage the integrity of that information and make sure that we're disseminating what we want to be disseminating and protecting what we should be protecting. And I think the last thing that people who are working with big data are struggling with right now is also the new workforce requirements and specialized skills associated with how we do all of these things.
Gotcha. Tony, based on what you've heard Simone talk about, how would you describe big data in terms of a product category, in terms of its maturity as a product category?
Well, I think obviously it is in some sense an outgrowth of prior art. But there are some new factors which are complicating our lives. First of all, there's the rapid proliferation of endpoints on the internet that are generating information. And, you know, it's not like just phones and computers and things. It's also increasingly sensors, the kinds of things like in smart electricity meters, for example. And the idea is that we would hook all of those things up to some kind of galactic central brain and analyze the data coming in order to transform the data into information, because, you know, it's actually not big data we want, it's big information we want.
That's Tony West with Cisco. In part two of our look at big data, Dan Doney, the Chief Innovation Officer with the Defense Information Agency, says responding to the challenges of big data ties in with meeting the needs of warfighters.
Many folks speak in terms of the big data challenge of the five V's: volume, velocity, variety, veracity, and value. It's the first one that gets the most attention, the volume of big data. But in fact, that's the one we've made the most progress
right
in attacking. And so of all the five, that's the least important from a challenge context.
Interesting.
Velocity is still an important challenge. Many of the algorithms that were designed for a static data set to scale out in terms of understanding static data have had to be re-engineered to deal with the pace of change of ever-changing data sources. We've made great progress in that area as well. It's the last three that are still really open challenges. Variety is a specific challenge that's important to the Defense Intelligence Agency because of our distributed mission. First, as an all-source intelligence agency, we are called to fuse the broadest variety of intelligence sources to create a big picture. A number of our partner agencies focus on specific, what are known as INTs. Those are intelligence sources. We are called to develop a fused intelligence picture in defense of our nation. That requires us to bring to bear many disparate sources, and that creates a huge variety challenge. The solutions to this challenge have not made as much progress as we've made in the other areas. The ability for machines to understand data in broad context and to reason on that data at large scale is still limited, although we are making some progress there.
Dan Doney with DIA. Finally, we wrapped up our year in big data with a program featuring the good-natured rivalry of Louis Shepard from the Microsoft Institute and Mark Lowenthal from the Intelligence Academy. Both are veterans of the nation's intelligence community, but while Shepard approves of the IC's big data initiatives, Lowenthal does not. Our radio conversation continues a debate begun in the October 2013 issue of Signal magazine. In this excerpt, Louis Shepard makes the point that big data has been an important part of the work of the intelligence community for over half a century.
Is there anything in our current discussion that could not have been said about radar, about SIGINT collection, processing, and analysis, and that actually was said about those innovations and those audacious attempts to collect, harness, analyze, and draw value from, analytic value from, ever larger collections of data, data produced by the outside world? That's the charge to the intelligence community, its leadership, its analysts, is to collect and make sense of as much data as the outside world produces to draw intelligence and information out of that data.
However, to manage the community is to choose. The community knows, the community has always known, They are not omnivorous. They're not going to collect everything, not going to see everything, and they have to make choices. Mm-hmm. And you have to choose. I'm going to look at this. I'm not going to look at this. I'm going to process this image. I'm not going to process that image. And what the big data advocates are saying is, oh, no, you can suck it all in, and you can process it all and get an answer. And that's where we lose track. But look, let's be serious. IT is electronic plumbing. It's a way of moving data from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And so we have this fascinating moment where the plumbers are in charge of the analysis. That has turned the world upside down and on its head. Nobody's arguing that data are not important. But you always have to make choices. And to sell the idea that you can take it all in and get valuable answers out of it is misleading at best.
A reminder that you can hear the entire Lowenthal-Shepard debate online at federalnewsradio.com/FCAAnswers. Still to come, spotlighting cybersecurity. You're listening to the best of FCA Answers on Federal News Radio.
FCA has been the association for global security since 1946. Experience FCA in action at its upcoming events. West 2014, focusing on the sea services, February 11th to 13th in San Diego. The Winter Intelligence Symposium, February 13th in Laurel, Maryland. Air Force ISR Industry Day, February 26th in Chantilly, Virginia. And the Homeland Security Conference, March 10th to 12th in Washington, D.C. Many of AFSEA's events offer continuing education to help you maintain professional certifications. Stay in the know with AFSEA's international journal, Signal Magazine. January's issue focuses on C4ISR, defense economics, and acquisition solutions. Further your education by taking advantage of Carnegie Mellon's Software Engineering Institute's Step Forward training package that includes 36 cybersecurity courses. Learn more and join today at afcea.org. That's AFCEA.org.
Welcome back to the best of FCA Answers on Federal News Radio. Cybersecurity was top of mind on the show during our first season. On one program, Dr. Ernst McDuffie from NIST and Mike Peterson from URS talked about raising cybersecurity awareness. In this clip, Peterson, former Air Force CIO, says he believes cybersecurity is a team sport.
Number one, you've got to build a team. And that's an in-house team that is competent, well-trained. But it's not just the in-house players. You've got to form strategic alliances with other members from industry, whether it's niche or long-term alignments. Not just industry or vendors, but we talked about NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, align with their procedures that they publish, align with Department of Homeland Security guidance, and then reach out to professional organizations. I've been an AFSEA member for 40 years. Mm-hmm. Reach out for education, for contacts. So number one's a team. And once you have that team in place, you can start to understand the real threat that's out there.
Now, given that guidance that was issued by NIST, and it's a very comprehensive document, is it possible to say whether government and industry are ahead of the curve on the persistent threat or still catching up with the threat?
So I would hesitate to categorize where we are exactly on that threat vector. But the important thing I think that has been pointed out is this idea that we're aware of the importance of cybersecurity issues and they're being considered as we're designing new systems. It's the type of thing that you have to build in from the very beginning. It's not something that you can apply to later on. So having that raised awareness over the last number of years certainly puts us in a stronger position than we have been in the past.
Dr. Ernst McDuffie from NIST. Another aspect of cybersecurity concerns identity assurance. For that, we turn to Ken Gant, the acting deputy director of the Office of Biometric Identity Management with the Department of Homeland Security.
What we really focus on now is delivering identity services in which the department can use in verification, identification, credentialing, and those types of services.
Hmm. Would you consider what you do more, or what your office does, more policy or technology management, or is it a little bit of both?
I would say it's a little bit of both, in that we do have the technology in the IDEN system, mm-hmm. which takes care of the matched or share, but we also have to cooperate and collaborate within the department when it comes to policy, but also with our stakeholders and partners, because the challenge will always be those aspects of privacy as well as civil rights and civil liberties.
On the academic side, Dr. Stephanie Shuckers, a professor at Clarkson University in Potsdam, New York, heads up CIDR, a research consortium which is doing cutting-edge explorations into future cybersecurity solutions.
We operate with support from National Science Foundation for our what we call affiliates, so essentially stakeholders. It's industry and government stakeholders. And through the affiliations, people like FBI, Department of Defense, system integrators, DHS, thank you very much, small businesses, technology providers, we work as a group to define research needs for the next generation of identity technology. Mm-hmm. Through this consortium, we're looking at the needs that are out there, the government needs, the commercial needs, and then defining what are the research needs.
The question of how to address the ongoing need for highly trained cybersecurity professionals was addressed by Dr. Ron Ross from NIST.
We are definitely short of skilled folks at the federal level. I know that shortage extends well beyond the federal government because we're always competing for the same scarce set of resources. It's really great, all the work that the folks at UMUC and up at Carnegie Mellon CERT are doing. We're enormously grateful for all the help that we're getting in training and educating this workforce that is an ongoing task for all of the folks who are involved in this fight. The education and training is at the core of our success. It's not just teaching people how to configure firewalls or patching systems. It goes deep into the university and colleges, into computer science departments and mathematics and engineering. We have to be able to have a skilled workforce to understand how to build more resilient information systems that can withstand these very sophisticated cyber attacks that are routinely hitting us every day.
One school which has revamped its cybersecurity offerings to address the needs of government and industry is University of Maryland University College, where Pat Delaney is Associate Vice President for Corporate Learning Solutions.
So what we did was, and this is a fairly recent phenomenon, in terms of developing a cybersecurity named program and certificate program. Prior, there have been degree programs in information assurance and computer science, et cetera. UMUC pulled together a advisory board when we were developing our cybersecurity programs because we wanted to make sure that we were developing a curriculum that addressed the most important needs in the workplace, the decision-making and the organizational aspects of cybersecurity education.
And Chris May with Carnegie Mellon University's CERT program has been working with the U.S. Army Signal School to revamp cybersecurity training based on new mandates from U.S. Cyber Command.
The central focus is defending and protecting of data, of networks, of systems, so that there is not significant loss to customer confidence or the general well-being of an organization. So that's at the highest level possible. When you get down into the weeds of what the various jobs or roles are within that category, you'll have highly specialized incident responders that are really there to be the SWAT team or the shock force that when an event happens, an internet security event happens, they are there to manage the incident.
Once again, if you'd like to hear any of these programs in their entirety, go to fcia.org/fciaanswers. Our special thanks to the staff and functional member committees of FCIA International for their ongoing support and production assistance for FCIA Answers. This program is a production of FCIA International, which is solely responsible for its content. On the web at fcia.org. I'm Max Kakis. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for FCIA Answers on Federal News Radio.